Hi, this is Nace Lozano, and you are listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. We usually begin with music, but for some reason I'm having a little technical difficulty with that. So instead, we're just going to jump right in, and hopefully I can figure that out by the writing segment. Cross hands or fingers. I am here solo today, no Swan. However, I am joined by the ever elusive AJ Diddy. Oh, hold up. There you go.
Yay.
Oh, wrong one. Ah. Deal with me, guys. We usually like to open with a Twitter profile. So AJ Diddy is a playwright, actor, and slash mark enthusiast.
Yes, I very much love slash marks. They are my favorite punctuation aside from the upside down question mark and exclamation point combined. It really throws you off kilter before it surprises you with a ah.
It's the interrobang.
It's called the interrobang?
It's called the interrobang. Back when I was in high school, I had like a group of friends who were super into the interrobang, which is the only reason I know that. What is going on with my music? Okay. So It is able to play. I don't know why I didn't play before.
We heard it in the studio and it sounds wonderful.
It's beautiful. It's so lovely for you guys out there. I'm sorry you had to miss it. Right. Maybe I can plug it into my laptop. I don't know.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll find out. It'll be a fun adventure. Or we'll just make doo-wop sounds while we're writing.
I can do the entirety of Hanson's Mbop by myself. That's not true. Why would I promise that? I can't do that.
Now we expect it of you. All right. AJ, there's so much that I'm actually desperately excited to talk to you about.
Great. I'm desperately excited to flummox the answers, I'm sure.
Yeah, this is going to be great. I want to start off with, because it's the first, you sent me this amazing email, by the way.
Thank you.
Which I wish I could read for the river writing. It was so beautiful.
Oh.
I passed it around to Bijan and he was laughing hysterically.
Stop it.
Anyway, I wanted to talk about Heart of Duckness.
Great. It's a play about the Berlin Conference of 1884, where Europe divided Africa basically amongst themselves into different colonies, except every character is a duck. And I'm working on it with Pipeline Theater Company has this thing called Playlab, where they get a whole bunch of up-and-coming playwrights together, and they spend an entire year in a play group writing together, encouraging each other, working with the ensemble, and it leads to a culmination of a reading, which will be next summer at an undisclosed location at this point, somewhere in New York. But it's really super exciting. It's the first play I've written about ducks, and I've learned so much about not only history, but about what horrible, horrible creatures ducks are.
Ducks are the worst. Did you see that YouTube thing about ducks?
I did. It's the true facts about ducks.
Yes.
It's from the guys who made True Facts About a Sea Pig, which is adorable. And then you watch the ducks one.
Oh, could
you? And do you want me to?
No. You keep talking.
Okay. Ducks are monsters. They are very, very cute. They appear very cute, but in actuality, they are nightmarish rape monsters, which is, I guess, why I decided to choose them.
Are there nightmarish rape monstery elements added into the play?
Well, yeah, absolutely. because I think that's all kind of the conference was ultimately. Was nothing less than the rape of Africa. So.
Oh, okay.
That was terrifying.
Oh my. I might be in trouble for leaving the AC on. I'm sorry for the people who
heard
the weird buzzing.
No, it's fine. I think everyone's fine with a little buzzing every now and again.
It's all good.
But
So why did you decide to make them ducks?
That's always, I guess, the great question. It's a weird accessibility thing, I think. If you're watching a whole bunch of white people talking about splitting up Africa who are human, it becomes a very boring play very quickly. And if you make a lot of duck puns, I found people are much more apt to swallow the historical stuff. I don't know, man. I've always had a thing for ducks. Ever since I was a kid, I would take every country I would travel to, I'd take a picture of a duck. I think it's that sort of idea that something that can appear cute and cuddly or something that can appear good, like the conference was to a lot of people, can be these horrific beasts on the inside. And there's something, I think, that about humanity. We are a lot closer to ducks than we might think. I think that's the main reason. Maybe I'll figure out as I go. But I think this is also a universe where there's also a lot of other fowl, not just waterfowl, but like pigeons and that sort of thing. And that there's a hierarchy to stuff and that the ducks are like on top, mm-hmm. but there are other more subjugated birds underneath them.
Yeah.
Finches, especially.
Fucking finches.
And, you know, the German conjugation of finches, which in this universe is Finchen, which I'm pretty sure is not actually German. But it's a really fun show. And we had a reading of the first couple of pages the other day in PlayLab, and everyone was like, this shouldn't work. Why does this work? And I'm like, I don't know. There's no reason. It was also an excuse to write for Leopold II, who mm-hmm. is one of, I think, the great monsters of history. He killed 10 million people.
Oh, my God.
And everyone kind of called him a humanitarian at the time. He was the king of Belgium. And his rubber plantations in the Congo ended up in the deaths of 10 million Congolese. And no one ever really talks about him so much. And he basically committed a genocide. It was basically his like own thing. Like even the Belgian government was like, we don't really care about Africa. We're fine. Like our country is fine. But Leopold's like, no, I want it. And he went down there and he kind of took it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know. He's so much fun to write for because he just always thinks he's so right. And that's... There's nothing more fun than to write for someone who thinks they're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So wait, how did you get into the Pipeline PlayLab group?
I submitted this application where they were like, why do you want to be a part of a play group? And like, give us an idea for a play and then send us a full-length play. And up until the beginning of this year, I didn't really have a full-length drama or play that wasn't a musical that I could submit that I hadn't already submitted to them before. So I wrote one. A full length, and then I submitted it with the application, and then we had an interview. Their playwright in residence this year is AP Andrews, who is a good friend of ours.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, and he's fantastic, and his play is going up, I think, mid-March with them. They're doing like
wonderful.
A workshop production. And my friend Tom Costello, who is a director at the theater company I'm a part of, at the Flea, he's now in charge of PlayLab because it's a bunch of Atlantic kids from NYU.
Oh wow!
I did the interview and they asked why ducks, and I gave a rambling explanation and they went, okay, let's do a play about ducks.
Let's do it.
Why not?
No, I love that. I actually had on here a lot of your plays tend to be very avant-garde, which I'm a huge fan of.
That's so crazy. I've never really considered myself avant-garde, but I guess no one avant-garde really considers themselves avant-garde.
Well, I mean, you are doing a play about ducks.
Yeah, but it's so weird. It just seems
like,
so
no,
logical
but that's
to
truth.
Me.
That's honesty. That's how the world works.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I don't know. It always comes across so logical to me. As I'm sure, like, you know, when Artaud was writing, like, Spurt of Blood, he was like, yeah, of course a pyramid falls from the sky. That's what we need. I guess I have written some – I think it's a weird play. I think it's the weirdest thing I've ever written. But, I live in that world, man. I like the idea of myth kind of being brought down to our level. I don't know. Did you ever read Grendel in like high school?
I did. I don't remember most of it.
There was just something about like this guy, this like literal monster, who gets an entire book where he just gets to like philosophize about the Zodiac, that I found so fascinating, and it's sort of stuck with me, mm-hmm. I think, ever since. I think most of my plays have been trying to find the humanity in monsters and the reality in myth. That's mm-hmm. what I hope to do. I don't know.
It's beautiful. Well, that was one thing I was going to note, is that despite the fact that there's always one or two elements that are completely crazy, I was reading through a couple of your plays.
What?
Like, not actually, but I was reading your website. So I was reading through the summary of a couple
of
your
plays. Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah, no, I don't have access to them, to my knowledge.
Oh, I'll send them to you. Jesus.
Please and thank you.
Yeah.
Specifically the one about the dragon actress that I...
Oh, yeah. Portrait of the Artist as a Young Dragon.
Yes.
Everyone was asking, well, what does it have to do with Joyce? And I said, it has nothing to do with Joyce. I just replaced the word artist with dragon and then ran around my apartment screaming, you're a genius!
So that's how that came to be? Because that was, I was like, this is such an interesting concept.
Yeah, basically, it was actually, that idea came from Boxed Wine Productions a long, long time ago.
Oh, I remember that.
Had a drunk brunch where...
I went to that.
You went to... Yeah, and it was AP Andrews, Alton, who I guess was on the show previously, and Kayla, who was also on the show previously. Ah, it's a lot of Ink and Worm alumni. But the assignment was we all had to get like completely plastered and write a play. I got super drunk and I wrote a play about dragons doing an Edward Albee play at a community theater, and about one of the actresses, one of the dragons struggles to like rationalize being an actress, and then she like dies and goes to dragon heaven and meets dragon god. It was very weird. I was very drunk. It was riddled with typos. But then when Serials came up, came around and came a knocking,
I'm gonna have you explain what Serials is.
Okay, great.
If you want to finish your story and then go backwards.
Oh no, actually it'll actually make more sense to explain Serials first, I think. because that'll explain why this concept would kind of work. Serials at the Flea was founded by Dominic Spillane and Stephen Stout a long, long time ago in, I wanna say, 2011? I don't know. Maybe 2012. But it's late night episodic madness at the Flea Theater where everybody, five plays enter, five 10-minute plays, and they battle it out for 3 days, and the audience votes on their favorites. And the top three get to come back the next week with a new episode of the same story, and then the two that got voted out come back with a new playwright and a new director for a brand new episode. And it's at 11 o'clock at night. Everyone gets a beer with their ticket. It's just like it's a wonderful booze fest of late night episodic madness. And I love it to pieces. I love it so much because it is not like playwriting. It is not like screenwriting. It's not like prose writing. It is a completely different genre of writing. If only because you have to write a play in 10 minutes that usually has a cast of upwards of six people who you have to write roles for, who are all given something like really cool to do to justify doing three shows at 11 p.m. And like making their curtain debut at like, you know, sometimes midnight 30. You also have to like, it has to be like, there's like a really cool structure to it. If you like study like the serials that were really successful, like some of them like followed like the blueprint to a T, others like went completely diverted from that. But it really encourages like writers to fail, which I think is really exciting. And it gives you like the room, to experiment in a way that I think a lot of other theater doesn't necessarily allow you to. Because you have to worry about selling tickets and you have to worry about other things. And this is just like, hey, we're all getting drunk at 11. Do you want to write a play about your favorite anime star going on an epic quest? Done. We've had people, one of my favorite ones that has not been produced yet, but fingers crossed, it's called Untitled Aaron Sorkin Project. And it's literally the pilot of The West Wing. condensed into 10 minutes and just acted out on stage. And I'm like, oh, come on. Somebody do that one. That one's been in the works for a while. But yeah. So I guess dragons then, and how dragons. That fits into that. And so I wrote Portrait of the Artist of a Young Dragon, which is about this dragon named Azazel, Zell for short, who is just trying to be an actress in New York City and dealing with the speciesism, speciesists, I don't know, of the humans in the world who think dragons are dangerous and they believe all these horrible, horrible stereotypes because, you know, dragons breathe fire and eat children. And they're like, no, we're just like actually trying to make it in the world. And there's a prophecy that if a dragon ever makes it to Broadway, that the world will end. So there's this entire faction of dragon slayers who are trying to stop that from happening. And Zell is sort of the dragon of prophecy. Dragon God makes a whole bunch of appearances.
Feel so bad for her. Could you imagine?
Yeah. Well, it's also really hard because the show, she eventually gets into a show that is headed to Broadway. But the problem is that it's called The Dragon Queen. And the problem is that it's actually really racist against dragons. So she has to deal with the fact of like, okay, so I'm going to be the first dragon on Broadway, but
do I want to do it this way?
Yeah. Do I want to be that? Do I want to reinforce all these terrible, terrible stereotypes?
I was actually thinking about that in regards to Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Right now there's that huge controversy about, like, we should stop idolizing this movie and it should stop being... Well, I suppose it was bigger, like, 2 or 3 years ago, but still.
Right.
And part of me is like, no, it's very true. It has such a bad stereotype, like, stereotypes just abound. But it was also the first movie that a woman of color won an Academy Award for.
Right. So... it's so hard because then you get into the question of, do you pick and choose? You know, do you acknowledge that the movie is deeply problematic, but it did a lot of good, or do you dismiss it outright? And I don't know, because honestly, I have never seen Gone with the Wind. I have never read it. I have only heard that it's kind of super racist. But...
It is. It's an interesting movie. I can't really get past that statement. There are a lot of problems with it. It is very problematic.
Right. Well,
yeah.
It came on the VHS with the two VHSs, like the two brick ones. I remember it's like, was that one in Titanic? Because
yes.
They were over 2.5 hours, I think.
Oh, my God.
And they couldn't fit it all on one tape.
Yeah. So Titanic had an act break. I remember that.
Yeah.
Totally unrelated, but just because I feel the need to point this out every time Titanic is mentioned.
Uh-huh.
There is a scene in Titanic where I think they didn't do CGI on the backdrop.
Really?
And it looks like nobody has ever caught that. And it was the only thing that I could catch. It looks like it's like a high school or like a college production of something because it's just like this like yellow board. And then in the next scene, it's like completely done up and everything. But for like just a minute, it looks very fake in the background. It's Jack and Rose are talking to each other at like the front of the ship. Nobody else has noticed. I don't know. I could be wrong. It just looks really bad compared to the rest of the movie.
Interesting. Is it in that first meet cute scene?
No, it's after she has tried to.
Oh, kill herself. Okay.
Yeah, it was well after that. There's like, it's a sunny day. I think it's the, they're walking around and possibly after the spit like a man scene. But I won't know for sure unless I rewatch that movie.
The extras in that movie are actually really, really cool. And when I was a kid, I watched that movie a whole lot because it had boobs in it. And and this is, I guess, the pre-internet days, but the extras in that movie are so much fun. I love me a good extra.
Yes.
There was one guy who is just relentlessly staring into the camera for the entirety of the shot. I think it's like Leo and Kate Winslet are like making cute on the boat, and there's just one guy, like everyone's like playing shuffleboard, or they're like lying out on the deck, or they're looking out the water, and then there's just one guy who is staring dead into the camera. And I'm like, that man's in SAG.
I need to look for that. My favorite extra by far, and this is a lot of people's favorite extra, is the propeller guy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that scene is so horrifying and so funny.
It just made no sense for them to include that. And they were like, well, that would actually happen. Let's just keep going. Just keep rolling.
Yep. Thunk.
Splash. Titanic.
Oh, okay. Some great writing in Titanic.
Some
brilliant, brilliant writing in Titanic.
Yeah, some really great moments in Titanic. Titanic is beautiful.
Yeah.
quote-worthy to this day. All right, so I want to continue talking about your writing projects, I think, before going on to your acting projects. But okay. Because this feels like a good place to do so, I'm going to pull on one of these. You are currently listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. If you would like to donate to us, I think is the way that I want to say that, we have a Patreon. So if you look for Radio Free Brooklyn on Patreon, that is a way that you could do that, and that would be wonderful. And that is my plug for that. So awesome.
Give them your money.
All the money. All of it. I'm also going to have us do the writing segment right now, which I think will be fun.
Awesome.
I have a play. I have a poem by Neil Gaiman. Yeah, Swan is a huge fan of Neil Gaiman.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, so I was like, when I was looking, because I usually don't have to pick this, I was like terrified. I'm like, what do I do? So I was just like, Neil Gaiman is a plus. Let's go with that one. So this is Conjunctions. Just so you know the way that this works, it's river writing. It's for all information. It's river writing, so pick a phrase, a sentence, something, and then write on from there. If you get lost, feel free to return to that idea. Or write about whatever you want, frankly. There's no... Great. Nobody needs to stick to this.
Great.
Cool. All right, so here's the poem. Conjunctions. Jupiter and Venus hung like grapes in the evening sky, frozen and untwinkling. You could have reached and up and picked them. And the trout swam. Snow muffled the world, silenced the dog, silenced the wind. The man said, I can show you the trout. He was glad of the company. He reached into their tiny pool, rescued a dozen, one by one, sorting and choosing, dividing the sheep from the goats of them. And this was the miracle of the fishes, that they were beautiful, even when clubbed and gutted, insides glittered, glittering like jewels. See this, he said. The trout heart pulsed like a ruby in his hand. The kids love this. He put it down and it kept beating. The kids, they go wild for it. He said, we feed the guts to the pigs. They're pets now. They won't be killed. See? We saw huge as horses. They loomed on the side of the hill. And we walked through the world trailing trout hearts like dreams, wondering if they imagine rivers, quiet summer days, fat, foolish flies that hover or sit for a moment too long. We should set them free, our trout and our metaphors. You don't have to hit me over the head with it. This is where you get to spill your guts. You killed in there tonight. He pulled her heart out. Look, you can see it there, still beating, he said. See this? This is the bit the kids like. This is what they came to see. Just her heart pulsing on and on. It was so cold that night, and the stars were all alone. Just them and the moon in a luminous bruise of sky, and this was the miracle of the fishes.
Jesus.
Beautiful, right?
Yeah.
All right, feel free to start writing. Hopefully this is playing.
Thank you.
coming to the end of the sentence. Feel free to end that naturally or find the end if you don't. I'm going to go ahead and close this down. Side note, I figured out how to get the music playing, so I'm very proud of me there.
You did it. We all did it together.
We all did it. It was a group effort.
She did it all by herself. I'm literally over here on the other side of the table being like, she's a wizard.
Wizard Harry. Oh my God, I'm totally going to talk to you about that at a certain point.
Okay.
But this is where we invite you to read what you have written. We will simply respond, thank you. And by we, I mean I.
Okay. And I mean, the ghost in the corner of the room has been staring at us for a while.
Yes, yes. She has?
Yes, she has.
Don't like to assign genders to...
Sure, but she kept screaming, I'm a woman, I'm a woman, I'm a woman. So I feel like it's okay for us
like
to assign.
I feel like in this instance.
Yes. Also, the fact that we made her up. I feel like we have some ownership. Okay. Do you want to go first?
I can go first.
Let's do it.
All right. Just her heart, fully exposed. Just her heart, everything she was, her soul. That is the favorite part, what they came to see, reach in and pull it out. Need to be more exposed. You can't create art with a bit of pain. That pain is what they want to see. I'm a fish then, I guess. Do I want to be caught? Do I want to be caught to be exposed? Do I have to be caught to be exposed? I ask questions I am afraid to answer.
Oh, thank you. That was lovely.
Oh.
Okay. It's okay. The man said, I can show you the trout. I turned him down because what was I supposed to do? He was surly and old and covered with grime. You could smell the time on him like mold. It clung to him, and I feared that if I stayed too long, it would cling to me too. So I left. Left him there standing on the river's edge, his heart on his sleeve. And these days, as the mold grows on me and the world winds its way down, I can't help but think of that man and how much I long to see the mysteries of the trout.
Ooh, thank you.
Yay.
What a
beautiful, inspirational poem to draw from.
Thank
Neil Gaiman, 10 out of 10.
Yeah, right? Like, go Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, wonderful. Jumping back in. Sorry, I'm like multitasking. So.
That's fine. Oh. You have a radio show to run. I just gotta sit here and answer questions. That's all.
I'm used to like being on the other side of this. Like I don't read and then keep track of time and everything. I usually just sit there and write. I have so much respect for Swan having to do this. It's like, how do you be creative? And also, like, there are 2 minutes left in this song.
That's. I mean, you wrote a heck of a poem for that.
Thank you. All right. So I do want to talk more about writing, but right now I want to jump into questions about Puffs.
Okay, great. Yeah. I didn't know if acting stuff was par for the course.
I love including acting because in my mind, acting is about script interpretation, which is about reading interpretation.
Great. Yeah.
And that is something that I feel like is very specific to what us as actors have to do.
Right.
And it's a lot of fun to bring up. But also, I just love Puffs, and it's Harry Potter related. So,
well, not legally.
Not legally.
It does take place at a certain school of magic and magic. So the show is called Puffs, or Seven Increasingly Eventful Years at a Certain School of Magic and Magic, and it's all 7 years at that school that you know and love. But it's all from the perspective of a certain house whose mascot is a badger. Sort of the trials and tribulations of what it's like to be the people who sit next to the heroes in class.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. Been doing it for 9 months, and we're about to go off Broadway.
Yeah, I saw it. I loved it. It was hysterical. I saw it when it was at the Pit. Mm. I also just conceptually am in love with it because I am a Hufflepuff.
Oh, good.
I've been sorted into that house, and for a long time, people would either make fun of me or what would happen is they'd be like, you're not really a Hufflepuff, Nasa. You're more of a Gryffindor. That's not true.
Right.
And at a certain point, you just have to embrace it like, no, I'm a Hufflepuff.
Well, Hufflepuff is just a Gryffindor without the confidence.
Yeah. I'm good at finding things, guys.
Super good at finding things. It's so weird because that is from the musical, I think. That punchline was from the Harry Potter musical. And I don't think it's said anywhere in the books that they're good at finding things. Is that just something badgers are good at? I don't know.
I don't know. I feel the need to look this up now because it's something that that when I first became aware of the fact that I'm a Hufflepuff, I was very ashamed of. And then I realized I'm really good at finding things. No. Like, honestly.
Yeah, no, I can attest to that. She is an excellent finder. I don't know. It's so interesting. Just learning more about this stuff because I always sorted into the smarts. In our show, we call them it's the braves, the smarts, the puffs, and the snakes, who are just objectively evil. I was always sorted into the smarts. But I actually think that I am smart, but I try and be a puff, and I think that's kind of what counts.
That's sweet.
Yeah, because I don't know. I grew so much respect for them because you don't really think about them when you read the books. You know, they're just such side characters, and they really do. They're kind of the heart of the school. You know, they may not go on the big adventures, but they're the kind of, like, you want to be friends with puffs. Like,
yes.
You don't really want to be friends with the smarts because they're sitting in their towers reading books about weird things and they don't really come out ever. And they have to solve riddles in order to get home. And you don't really want to hang out with the braves because everyone keeps dying.
Also, I feel like the braves are the type of people where you're like, hey, guys, it's Friday night. Do you want to stay home and play video games? They're like, no, we're going to go on an adventure. And you're like, okay, guys, seriously, adventures are great, but video games.
Well, no, exactly. Exactly. They're the guys who want to, like, do shots of fire whiskey and then, like, run naked through the Forbidden Forest. And the puffs are like, what if we just, like, ate a bunch of cake and, like, watched some wizard movies? They don't have movies. Oh, my God. Wizards don't have movies.
Oh, man. There's this whole, like thread on Reddit about, like, when a Muggleborn goes to Hogwarts. And it's just like, guys, a pen. Why don't we use pens?
Ooh, what magic is this? And, you know, it's amazing, like, stuff like, you know, Mr. Weasley has, like, never heard of, like, a telephone before. And it's like, I guess, because the wizard community I always thought was, like, so big. And then when you actually get down to it, it's not a huge community, even in the books. Like, there's, like, three or four villages that house all of them, which is kind of crazy.
Well, I feel like they're very segregated.
Yeah. And our play sort of deals with a lot of that because two of our three leads are Muggleborn, and they're from America.
I forgot about that. That was lovely.
The one who was born in England got rid of her accent, so she wouldn't sound like her family, who are all puffs.
What? That's such a weird coincidence that this American play has two Americans and one British woman who gets rid of her accent.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing.
That's
that is
so weird.
I'm very excited. I really hope that the other Certain Wizard play that's currently in London transfers to Broadway, so then we can have wizard wars.
Oh my God, I would love that.
Or we have little cardboard signs and we stand outside going "Little Brother" or something. I don't know. It's all very exciting and all very scary and.
So it's making its off-Broadway debut.
Yes, at the Electra Theater.
Wow.
We start previews on September 29th.
Yeah.
And we run Thursdays through Saturdays every day until the world burns out or people just don't want to see us anymore.
That sounds beautiful.
Yeah.
What is the question I was going to ask? So with a play like this where the world, I suppose, is something that is very well known.
Right.
But these characters are completely created. I mean, you have... You're the narrator.
I am the narrator, yes.
So you don't have to, like, create a world, but, well, you do, kind of.
It's a very different, it's a completely different track of the play. So everybody else gets to, like, interact with each other, and then I'm running this completely opposite, like, parallel track to them, which is fun because I get to interact with the audience, and I get to make people high-five me who are very against high-fiving people. I only got turned down once and, it was just, the girl was very nervous and didn't know what to do. I put the hand near her to high five and she just, like, panicked. Afterwards, after the show, we gave her, we bought her a beer and said, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to put you in that spot. And she was just like, no, it was fine. I panicked. Yeah, but we've gotten a lot of really, we have fans now. There are fan theories about the show, which is crazy.
What?
After the Certain Other Wizard play came out, that's currently going out in London,
I think that one we can say the name.
Cursed Child? Yeah. Okay. So when Cursed Child came out, our playwright, Matt Cox, who's just a comic genius, he read it on Saturday night when it came out, Saturday at midnight. He read it, and then he wrote his parody of it in 2 days. It's called 19 Years Later.
Oh my God, I saw photos of that on Facebook.
Yeah. It explores what happens in the 7 years, in the 7 years that Cursed Child covers, or in the 4 years, I guess, that Cursed Child covers, mm-hmm. And where our puffs are in relation to that. And now there are people who are doing the expanded Puffs universe, the Puffsverse, as they're calling it, and explaining why people got sorted into which house in the extended timeline, and what the time travel means in that universe, and what and I don't want to give any spoilers away for Puffs, but like what specifically my character means in that world. It's the craziest thing. It is absolutely the craziest thing.
I have so many questions that are going to like massively spoil Puffs, so I'm not going to ask them right now, but we're going to discuss afterwards.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I really want to know. Although I am going to throw out, like, Puffs is really great. It's a lot of fun. Also, if you're like a Harry Potter fanatic, which, there's a fly.
Kill it with fire.
I am not a dragon. I do not know what you mean. I could be on Broadway.
You can. You can, babe. No one's a dragon in here except for the ghost woman in the corner of the room. I've named her Abigail.
Hi, Abby. Sorry, she doesn't like being called Abigail.
She does not.
She doesn't like being called Abby, rather. No. If you're a fan of extended universes and all of that such goodness, this is a really great play. Also, if you're a Hufflepuff.
Yes. Unrelated completely to our play in 100% of the Witch.
Yeah. Unrelated completely. But also Huffles or Puffs need more love.
Yes.
We need more love.
Yes. And I think this play really does. It's good for that. It's really good for that community.
Yeah.
I feel.
That's great. I'm really excited for that.
Puffs.
Yay. Okay. Before we go into rapid fire, I do want some questions about solo work.
Great.
Yeah. So you do a lot of, I don't ask questions so much as I state topics.
And then you're just like, oh, okay, great. I can just go if you want.
No. So you do a lot of solo work. And in beautiful email that you wrote that brought tears to my eyes because it was so beautiful. My font changed and I don't know why is a line from that. Sorry.
I honestly don't know how that happened. Sometimes I write emails and the font will change halfway through and then I have to scream about it.
You're part of a solo collective.
I am. It's called Decent Company. It was founded by this guy, Josh Borman, who was looking around at all of his friends who were doing solo work and was like, well, I love all these people and I think they're really talented. Maybe we should just get them all together and have them do stuff. And we, very similar to Undiscovered Countries, we do kind of like a cabaret esque thing, but with solo work. Mm-hmm. It's usually around a theme, which sometimes UC does too. This month's theme is loyalty, and in fact, right after this, I'm going to go into tech for that, and we're going to do two shows tonight at the Tank. If anybody here is live and listening, one at 8 and one at 10, and I'm playing Abraham, that Abraham. Talking to God 7 years after the whole sacrifice incident.
Yes.
When he's burying the knife that he was going to use to sacrifice Isaac. It's a laugh-a-minute riot. It's really like just jokes left and right.
As one would expect it to be.
Yeah. And it's the first solo show I've done where I haven't written it, which is really kind of fun and crazy. Because it's so many words. It's so many words.
And you don't get to play with them the way you can play with them if it's your words.
Yeah, because the playwright can't get mad if you're him. that's the way I've always justified not getting all my lines right. I've been doing solo work for a while now. I kind of fell into it because of Undiscovered, actually. Yeah.
Your solo work is very beautiful. It's very raw.
Thanks, man. Yeah, that last one was super raw back in November.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like every good play is an exorcism of some kind. It's something that when you read it, it's really the author or the playwright working through something and kind of putting it in a little petri dish and dissecting it. And like, once you can do that, once you can kind of remove it from yourself and look at it, you can destroy it, or at the very least come to grips with it and kind of move on. And I've always used solo work for that. I did a play, The Chicken Man, or a supposedly fun thing I did for 6 months, because I did a cruise ship for 6 months, and I actually went crazy, a little bit crazy. And I wrote a show about it, and I can't tell you, after 6 months of being surrounded by magicians who were trying to convince me that what they were doing was good, to have the ability to scream in front of an audience, magic is so fucking stupid, and to have the audience applaud and, like, scream, I can't tell you how cathartic that is. But, yeah, I don't know. I think solo work is such a strange beast, because I know people can do it in like different characters, but I don't know. It's a storytelling thing, I guess. Because people are like, well, who are you talking to? Why are you telling the story? And when you're doing a solo work about yourself, it's like, oh, because I want to tell this story.
Yeah, because it's something that's weighing on me.
Yeah, it solves it pretty quickly.
Yeah, that was always been my problem whenever I try to write solo work, is mm-hmm. I tend to do it in a class setting, and they're always like, well, you need to have characters, and there needs to, why are you telling people this? And I'm like, oh, that's hard.
Yeah, it is. But then, I don't know, and then the theory aspect of it always gets me weird, because I'm like, just make a thing, and then, you know, you can talk theory after.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why I think sometimes, you know, the stuff we would talk about in college would always, like, kind of hinder more than help. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of really good plays who got told that what they were doing wasn't good, and then they just stopped because they were too scared to continue.
Yeah, that's, I find that too.
Yeah.
Limit creativity just because of criticism.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Just make the thing.
Exactly. And if people don't like it, screw them.
Yes. Light them on fire with your dragon breath.
And rewrite it until, or don't, but like rewrite it until you're happy with it. Screw them.
Right.
Yeah.
That's some strong, powerful words there, Nason.
Oh, thank you. I give myself very good advice, but I very seldom follow it.
Humanity.
The humanity.
Okay. I love the humanity, the one that's the multicolored manatee, the rainbow manatee. That's my favorite
meme.
That's
my favorite too.
That's the other one where the manatee is looking down at the child and he says, "Burn the world down." I was like, yes.
I love puns. I'm a pun person.
Yeah. Oh.
I'm a pun person. I know. I'm the worst. All right, so we're getting close to the end of the show. That was too far away from my mic. We're getting close to the end of the show. So we usually end it with a bunch of rapid fire questions. So
great.
I say rapid fire. It's more like we just have questions.
Okay, great.
Cool. What is your favorite brag?
Brag? That's hard. Does it have to be a real brag? Can we make them up? It does have to be a real brag.
Or at least one you believe is real.
Oh, okay. Oh, well, that gets more complicated. When I was 17, I was in a play written by Aaron Sorkin.
Ooh.
And he gave me a bracelet from Tiffany's. As an opening night gift, and he said, when he met my parents, he said, are you his parents? We love your son. And my dad almost started crying, and it was the proudest moment of my life.
That is beautiful. Oh, my God.
So that is my brag.
My goodness.
Does it have to, do I have to say hashtag humble brag now? Is that
hashtag humble brag.
Hashtag humble brag.
Hashtag sorry, not sorry.
Sorry. It's hard for me not to hear that, not vomit. What? Can I ask what yours is?
Yeah, mine is, so when I was working at NYU Grad Acting, one of the voice teachers there was a vocal coach to Sir Patrick Stewart. And
what?
Right. And so he came in and I put him into the room where we were going to leave him, which was right behind me. And I got to hear him vocal warm up, which was already an amazing experience in my life.
Uh-huh.
But as he was leaving, he was like, goodbye. And I wish I could remember his exact words. It was like really one of those really big moments. But like, he kind of flirted with me. Like, not actually, like, it was definitely one of those, I know that you're going to get a kick out of this flirting, but it was still like, goodbye, love, or something of that sort, and then, like, a little kiss. And I was like,
oh my God. Oh, it's Picard.
I, like, texted my mom immediately and was like, bad you friends. Never get
Did he give you the quadruple take? The infamous quadruple take?
No, I'd love that. I saw that, though. That's the best.
Oh, my God. It's comedy perfection. I watched that video when I'm feeling really sad.
Yeah. He makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Because he's so, I don't know, he's so wonderful. All right. What streaming or podcasts are your guilty pleasures?
Guilty pleasures.
Guilty pleasures.
I actually don't listen to enough, I don't think, to say guilty pleasures, but I will say Night Vale is one of the most beautiful podcasts I've ever listened to.
I need to listen to that.
And I just finished Alice Isn't Dead, which is their spinoff of that, which is Night Vale, but like without any of like the kind of humor that makes Night Vale that. It's a gothic horror story.
Ooh.
And it is, oh my God, it's so good. I want Cecil Baldwin to narrate my eulogy. That man's voice is so beautifully like melodic.
And you should create a eulogy and send it to him so that can happen.
Yeah, and then if you give enough money to Night Vale, he will craft the personal message for you. And I'm like, actually, can you just like read this one?
Be the thing. Oh, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. These are all my favorite questions, by the way, that I'm just like rattling off. Oh,
great.
My guilty pleasure. I should answer this. Everyone already knows it. It is a combination podcast-wise. I'm obsessed with stuff you've missed in history class.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
I can't
listen to another podcast until I finish this one. I don't know why. It's just one of those, like, brain things.
Oh, yeah, it's the completionist in you.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I've gone through absurd levels for that. Like, card games. I play card games a lot. I like poker or, like, solitaire. And I would not be able to do anything else until I finish one game of solo. Like, I'd sit there and just, like, for days.
Whoa.
I'm crazy like that. But then Netflix-wise, which is another option.
Oh, okay.
I'm, as everyone here already knows, or by here I mean listening, Frasier. I'm obsessed with Frasier.
Oh, yeah.
I need to get off of that, though, because I've just watched the entire series. So,
Is it your first time through?
It was. Okay. My first time completely
through. If it was, like, your fourth time through, I'd be like, Nay, so there are other fish in the sea.
I mean, that was me in Parks and Rec for a long time.
Yeah, I spent an entire summer rewatching Parks and Rec like three or four times.
Yeah.
And it eventually got to the point where Ron Swanson would say anything and I would just lose my mind. His giggle when they show little Sebastian for the first time is something.
Oh my God.
I want it to be my ringtone.
It's beautiful. All right, so during puberty, one tends to find that there's a book or a story or something that has changes them or influences them in a major way. Do you have one?
Yes, I do. And I thought a lot about this question because I cheated and listened to previous podcasts. There is a book. I do not know who it's by. It's called Alice in Rapture, sort of. And it's a coming of age story about a girl in small town Americana. And the reason it was so, I think, influential on me was that I had never read a book really before that from the perspective of a preteen coming of age girl. And I spent so long being like, oh my God, you know, girls are so different from me and I don't understand them. I'll never understand them. And then I read the book. I'm like, oh, they're just like me. They just have, you know, they have to deal with a lot of different stuff when puberty hits.
Yeah.
And it went into very, very deep detail about menstruation, which I did not know was a thing. And so I had to look it up in the dictionary. And I remember looking it up and then slowly closing the dictionary and going, I am a man now. Like, that was the turning point, I think.
That's how all men can claim it. For women, it's actually getting your period. For men, it's understanding what it is. There are so many men who are still boys.
Yes, no. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh yeah, like, I don't know, fire comes out of there once a month. I don't know.
That's what happens. You burn through a pair of pants, just always.
Oh, I have to say, that'd be pretty badass.
I would be so annoyed.
It's true. You'd burn down, you know, buildings.
It's probably as annoying as what actually goes down.
Yeah.
I always have a hard time with this one. For somebody who asks it a lot, I always have a hard time. Just because for me it was a lot of television in those days. Footy Cootie was a big one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Did you read the manga?
I did, so I cheat and I say Footy Cootie because I read the manga, but I definitely watched the TV show first.
I know. Well, I mean, that counts because the manga I guess the TV show, the anime is faithful, but it's not 100% faithful to the manga.
Yeah, they help each other, though. I'd recommend watching the anime first and then reading the manga because the anime is a bit more neatly wrapped up for you, whereas the manga is a bit more what, but it completes it and then you can be like, oh, now I understand what's happening.
Awesome.
Obsessed with that show. Okay, one more question and then I think we will start winding down.
Great.
Do you have a book or anything like that that you have, like, that you need to get to, that you're like, how have I not gotten to this yet?
Oh, man. I think pretty much all of Russian literature.
Just all of it.
Save for One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisevich. I probably butchered that name. I have not read, like any Tolstoy. I think I started Crime and Punishment in high school, but I got overwhelmed because, I don't know. But I love all the Russian novels that I've read, and I haven't gotten to like War and Peace or anything like that.
Mm.
I don't know.
That's a pretty intense one.
Also, I have to finish Finnegan's Wake at some point, but it is so hard. It's so hard. I don't. It's nonsense. It's a crossword puzzle. You're reading a crossword puzzle. Anyway, to be the Joyce fan that I am and not read Finnegan's Wake, I feel is sort of like a knock against me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all.
For me, I think it's still, I just bought the Decemberist's new book and I haven't gotten to it.
Colin
Malloy's book.
Oh, I didn't know he
wrote one, and it's illustrated by his wife and it's beautiful. Oh. And I have not read it, which is my fault.
Oh man, I love that band. I love that band.
They're like one of my favorites. And I also have The Mountain Goats, or John Daniel's book, that I have not read either.
Wolf in White Van?
Yeah.
Did you borrow that from Caroline?
No, I bought it with my monies that I earned.
She lent it to me, and it is amazing. It's actually a really cool book. And then the end just devolves into Mountain Goats lyrics. Like the entire last chapter is just Mountain Goats lyrics.
Well, now I have to read it. I feel so silly that I haven't.
Yeah, you'll have a great time.
I'm really excited about it. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Nace. This was wonderful.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I'm going to go ahead and be totally on top of this. And I'm going to leave you with a word, take it or leave it, Opia.
Things have been okay for me, except that I'm a zombie now. I really wish you'd let us in. I think I speak for all of us when I say I understand why you folks might hesitate to submit to our demand. But here's an FYI. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes. All we wanna do is eat your brains. We're at an impasse here. Maybe we should compromise. If you open up the door, we'll all come inside and eat your brains. I don't wanna nitpick, Tom, but is this really your plan? Spend your whole life locked inside a mall. Maybe that's okay for now, but someday you'll be out of food and guns, and you'll have to make the call. I'm not surprised to see you haven't thought it through enough. You never had the head for all that bigger picture stuff. But Tom, that's what I do, and I plan on eating you slowly. All we wanna do is eat your brains. We're not unreasonable. I mean, no one's gonna eat your eyes. Mind. You open up. guess we'll table this for now. I'm glad to see you take constructive criticism well. Thank you for